Perfect.
Well, I call this meeting to order at 5:17 p.m. on May 21st, 2026. We
Okay,
do
perfect.
roll call.
Okay, perfect. We can move on to roll call. And we will start with Ashley Jackson.
Here.
Eric Howard.
Here.
Cedric Smith. Belen Sisk. Josue Romero.
Here.
Iris Berry. John Dalton.
Here.
We have quorum. We may proceed.
All right, thank you. So the second item on the agenda is approval of the April 8th meeting minutes. Has everyone had a chance to review those? Any questions? I can just say I reviewed the minutes and it all looked good to me. I don't have any questions.
I don't have any questions. They look good to me when I looked at them.
Likewise, I don't have any notes to add to the minutes.
Okay. I do appreciate when you note that when certain commissioners come in, so Commissioner Romero was in at 5:21. It's just helpful to know. So I appreciate that from City Clerk's office. All right. I don't think we have any further questions or conversation about it. We can go ahead and move in for vote to approve them.
Okay, we need a motion and a second.
I'll make the motion too. I'll move to approve them.
I'll second.
Okay, hearing a motion and a second to approve the minutes, we'll move to roll call. Ashley Jackson?
Aye.
Eric Howard?
Aye.
Josue Romero?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's move on to the third agenda item, call to the audience. So this time is reserved for members of the public to provide comment. Do we have anybody here that would like to share anything? We do have Daniel here, but he'll be speaking to the next agenda item. If anybody's talking, you're on mute. All right. I'm not hearing anything. I think we can go ahead and move on. I see Belen just popped in. Hello. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can. Can you guys hear me?
Yep. Can hear you just fine.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll have her marked at 5:20 p.m.
Thank you. So we are on now the fourth agenda item, the TCE resolution update. I'm going to spend about 60 seconds here just teeing this up here, and then I'll give it over to Daniel. I invited Daniel today just to provide an update on this work on behalf of the commission. So thanks, Daniel, for joining us. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with this work, early last year, I invited Daniel into some conversations with the HRC to help us understand the history of the TCE water contamination that affected Southside Tucson residents. And after those initial conversations, the HRC formed a subcommittee That included Daniel, two community advocates, and me and John Dalton from the HRC. The subcommittee was tasked with identifying ways that we, the HRC, could support advocacy efforts related to the long-term health and well-being of those who have historically been impacted by TCE. The subcommittee supported a community lesson or session last June. I think we had about 30, 40 Southside residents and a Ward 5 representative. And that session informed the development of an HRC resolution. And that resolution called on the mayor and council to reaffirm their commitment to this issue and provide some specific things the community said they needed from the city to address the historical harm caused by the TCE water contamination. So things like better access to free or reduced healthcare. The mayor and council adopted the resolution in November with some additions, and it was later then read publicly at two Southside events. And so I think it did a good job of elevating the issue. The resolution identified Pima County as a key partner with a defined role in ongoing efforts. So the HRC also approved a letter. You might recall this year, we actually approved it last year, but earlier this year, we've been having conversations about a letter to Pima County Supervisor Andres Cano's office asking him to meet with us, the subcommittee, but learned that there was enough momentum without us that we, the HRC, didn't need to have that conversation. So that kind of brings us to end of last year, early this year in January, where I'm hoping kind of Daniel can speak to some of the work that has been happening since then. So I'll give it over to you, Daniel.
Great. Thanks so much, Eric, and everybody. I assume you can hear me. Okay. Yeah. The other thing is I was wondering, I put just a few slides together. Is there any way I could share them?
Yes, you should be able to do that on the very top if you're in Teams. Let's see here. Will you hit those three buttons where it says more on the very top? Do you see it?
Sure, yep.
Okay, there you should be able to see a setting for sharing your screen. Let me look if I'm in the right spot. Let me double check real quick.
Yeah, I can get to a share screen, but then the share option isn't available to me, so I'm wondering if I need a permission or something.
That's weird. It should allow it through. Let me try another method real quick.
Yeah, it's also okay if I can't. It just might be a little easier for folks.
Yes. Is it like a PDF that you have or the slides?
It's just slides that I have.
Okay. What I can do is if you don't have my email address along and copying Abraham, you can send it to Eric. Eric, if you can throw it to me right away, then I'll send it to everybody else while you guys are having this conversation so that others can open it up on the laptop, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, and we can also just share it afterwards.
Okay, then.
If that's easier.
All right. Sorry. I'll have to look into it because it should be there in the future. But since it's not working, I'm going to have to inquire about it afterwards.
Okay, yeah, no problem.
In the chat?
I'm sorry?
You can't put it in the chat.
I could put the presentation in the chat, maybe.
They're frowning that going on because the public, when we do the video recording, we upload it. It's not visible to them. So that's why if it's on the screen and everyone's remoting it and seeing it, they can. Others who can't, they won't be able to see it.
So, gotcha. Well, if it's helpful to you, you can forward it to me and I can share my screen and you can just tell me when to flip through the slides.
You can do it.
Okay.
You think you can do it right now, Eric? Or
Because I've been able to share before and it looks like I'm looking at your name and it says you don't have a verified Teams account, but I do. I wonder
if that's probably the issue. Okay, let me just send it to you. Sorry for the brief delay here.
Good.
So, okay, I just emailed it to you, Eric. And hopefully while you're getting that, I can just kind of introduce myself to everybody. I don't think I know a lot of the people here. So thank you so much for this opportunity, and thanks to the HRC in general for all the work that Eric was just referring to. I am actually a psychologist at the University of Arizona, but I have done, for about a decade now, research with the community in Southside Tucson. I assume at this point, many of the people here are familiar with the history of the contamination itself. You can feel free to ask me questions about it later, but just to kind of introduce anyone who's less familiar, there was, contamination in Southside Tucson around the area of the airport, in basically the 1940s through the 1970s due to military and, industrial activity in that area. So up to maybe 40,000 people, 30,000, 40,000 by some estimates were exposed, during that time period into the early 1980s. The area, since the 1980s has been what's called a Superfund site, which means that the Environmental Protection Agency, is tasked with, remediating the groundwater in that site. So the groundwater is what's contaminated in that area. At the time, people were served water primarily from groundwater sources, which isn't the case now because of the Colorado River Project. So that was the initial kind of source of the contamination. Since the 1980s, that contaminated groundwater has not been served to people living in that area. The groundwater is so contaminated that it continues to be remediated. So there's ongoing work that Tucson Water and other partners such as the EPA and Raytheon and the military do constantly to try to remediate the groundwater. And that is all an effort that the city has been involved in for decades. Tucson Water in particular, the community feels like has done a pretty good job of addressing the water contamination itself. But where my work comes in and where a lot of community activism on the south side comes in and where the partnership with the HRC has been really helpful is that a lot of people in the south side community feel like the health impacts, which they, many of them perceive as intergenerational and not just impacting the people who were originally exposed to the contaminated water. They feel that those health impacts have not been adequately addressed at any point. There were some lawsuits back in the 90s, but many people were not able to participate in those. They were not class action. And so a lot of my work has been around the stress and the negative impact of these exposures and uncertainties about whether health problems in people's families may be related to these original environmental exposures. So, Eric, if you're able to, I had some animations, but it's okay if we can't open it up in PowerPoint or something. You could try Google Slides and see if it works. Yeah. Let's just see. Yeah, and I don't know, are you able to just present it? Yep, great. Thank you. So if you go to the next slide, Eric, and on this I just put some of the key text from the resolution. So we'll just kind of like walk through these, but just to kind of orient people. So this is the resolution that Eric was referring to that our focus group kind of worked out. And obviously we don't need to read through all this now, but just to orient people. Basically, the resolution that HRC submitted to Mayor and Council was reiterating first that we support the city's work on the groundwater remediation itself. But if you see points 2 and 3 here, the idea was that more work perhaps could be done by the city and by partners to address the health impacts themselves. And so you can see that the resolution was designed for Pima County, as Eric mentioned, to be sort of brought into the effort. So the city is encouraging Pima County, and this is because Pima County runs the public health department. So the city saw it as perhaps outside of their purview to do the immediate kind of outreach and funding for the health impacts. So they called on Pima County to do it. Eric, if you click ahead, thank you. And then, so this is another point from the resolution that we don't have to spend much time on, but the idea was that we were also encouraging ongoing kind of communication between all the different agencies that are involved in addressing the contamination at the Superfund site. And then if you click ahead, Eric, the last point on the resolution here was that we were also encouraging that mayor and council work with community and involve community in decisions. There's a lot of activism on this issue on the south side. And this is just sort of how the resolution concluded, that mayor and council, when they adopted the resolution, were encouraging, as they say here, bold action to address the historic and ongoing impacts. So, Eric, if you please click ahead again. I actually put a little timeline in here of all the things that Eric just walked us through, so we don't really need to review these, but I did just want to kind of bring people up to speed that, you know, just in the course of a year, basically, from Eric sort of finding out about, you know, my work and the history of the contamination, HRC moved really quickly on this issue, and the community partners that we got to kind of form the subcommittee worked really quickly and well. I thought we all worked well together on this issue. When it was brought to mayor and council members Lane Santa Cruz and Rocky Perez really sort of, you know, championed this, wards 1 and 5. They brought it up, for, discussion at, you know, study session. And then at the next mayor and council meeting, we had some speakers to speak in support of the resolution, and mayor and council unanimously voted to adopt it. As Eric referred to, community members such as Alicia Vasquez, from the Mexican American Heritage and History Museum, in the meanwhile, were doing several commemorative events last year to, get the city in general to kind of think about the history of this water contamination and to bring it back into sort of collective memory. And so this ended up being very good timing that, as Eric said, we were able to kind of actually read the resolution at some of these community events. So Eric, if you click ahead, now, hopefully everyone's up to speed generally. And I can just talk a little bit about how this work that the HRC did has really, I think, led to positive impacts just in the past few months. So getting that resolution through in the first year, in my experience working with the community and now working with Pima County, really had a lot of impact. So what's happened since the resolution was adopted by the city is that almost immediately people from Pima County and specifically the health department started to work with and reach out to community members about the issues that they've been bringing up for decades now. So Eric, if you click to the next bullet point, there have been multiple meetings that have happened on the south side that I've attended since, well, basically in 2026, since the resolution passed, where community groups, such as in particular, there's a group called Las Aguas, which is one of the sort of longstanding activist groups on this issue in the south side. They've been meeting multiple times with Assistant Supervisor Steve Holmes from Pima County, and with the Pima County Health Department, including at some of the meetings, the director of the health department, Dr. Teresa Cullen, and District 5, Andres Cano's office, has had people there consistently as well. And before I talk a little bit more about what Pima County has been actually doing to address the community's issues, I do just want to mention that my observations of the community members, just the fact that they were meeting with Pima County and meeting with the health department director was really impactful for a lot of people. So they would mention multiple times at this meeting that it felt like their voices were being heard for the first time in years and so on and so forth. So even just getting the foot in the door and having people talking to them was really significant for a lot of people who have suffered from this issue over the years. Eric, if you click ahead. So what has been proposed by Pima County after having some meetings with the community, having some listening sessions, as a way of kind of working towards the goals that were outlined in the resolution, is a 3-year plan, which is happening in part because the health department has actually now created a standing environmental health working group. So this is something that didn't necessarily exist at Pima County, although they were already working on some of these issues. Other environmental health issues such as heat. So heat is probably the biggest issue that Pima County Health Department focuses on that we would think of as environmental. They've been doing some work on this issue, but now, ironically, probably partly through funding from the sale of the land that is becoming the Project Blue. So that's a whole nother sort of issue that we could discuss. But through some of that money, Pima County is creating this environmental health working group. And as part of that working group, which has a lot of good people in it that I've met, they're going to do this 3-year plan to try to address some of the community concerns specifically around water contamination. So if you click ahead, Eric, I think you can just do maybe 4 clicks because I just kind of put the points up there. So these are the last point I'll get to in a second, but the 4 underneath Pima County Health Department. So these are the major initiatives that Pima County is trying to do as part of this 3-year plan to address the community concerns. So they wanted work to do a lot more community education and engagement around water contamination and how to reduce impact with chemicals that are out there in the world. Also just increasing awareness about the historic issue because there are many people living in Southside Tucson who are not aware at this point that this issue even occurred in the past. So there's a kind of a community engagement, wing, to this, provider training. So they're going to try to work to provide much more training for healthcare professionals, which is a big issue community members bring up constantly, that if they have a cancer, and they're working with, you know, their general practitioner or something like this, the person may not know or may not think to ask them about, you know, where they lived and where they grew up and were they exposed to these chemicals. So this is something provider training community members have asked for a long time. In general, this Pima County is trying to work to coordinate more between the different stakeholder groups that are involved, as you saw on previous slides in the resolution. There's a lot of groups involved in addressing the water contamination, and now if we bring the health into it, they're going to try to basically provide some settings where community members can come and hear not just about progress on the contamination itself, but progress on health and risks to health and so on and so forth. So that's a pretty big service that they could potentially be doing. And then finally, although this seems maybe a little less significant, they've also made significant commitments to archive all the resources that have accumulated over the years around the Superfund site and the history of the contamination. Many of these are paper resources that are just kept in a library on the south side. And so they're going to digitize those and kind of have a dedicated space where all this information about the site and the history of the impact on the community is kept. So it's actually a pretty big deal, even if it seems maybe small from the outside. So this is what Pima County has promised. It's not all the way, right? So it's not something like, for example, providing free healthcare to people who lived in the impacted area. Obviously, something like that would take a lot of resources. And, you know, at the moment, the health department is not able to commit those, but these are certainly steps in the right direction. The community members seem very excited about this. And there's ongoing talk through, for example, this stakeholder coordination piece that may be working with the U of A, may be working with EPA and other organizations. We could in the future do projects that would allow for sort of epidemiological testing and maybe better healthcare access. Along those lines, the last thing I want to say, and then I'll stop monopolizing the meeting, is very recently, as a result of this work, Congresswoman Adelita Grijalva, who's, you know, from the South Side, and her father, her late father was very active on this issue, and they've known about it, and their friends and family have known about it and experienced it themselves. Pima County has been reaching out to the Congresswoman, and they have kind of looped the Congresswoman's office in with myself and with Alicia Vasquez from Mexican American Heritage and History Museum. And we're actually working right now a little more at the federal level on some action that the Congresswoman wants to take part in against recent EPA announcements. So this is something that has just come up actually in this past week. But EPA is proposing some, we can get into the details if you want, but basically some rollbacks to regulation of some of the chemicals that are in the groundwater in Tucson. And so Congresswoman Grijalva is part of an effort that is kind of growing right now where we're going to be writing letters to the EPA and trying to push back against these recent announcements, using the history of the Southside experience as a kind of case study to make the argument that people around the country don't want these chemicals to be less regulated or to still be present in our water. So this is just, I think, a little snapshot of how Eric and Cedric and the HRC and all of John's advice kind of reaching out and working with us and working with the community on this issue really just got a ball rolling that just kind of continues to pick up momentum and gather moss or whatever metaphor you want to use. So it's been very exciting. And I'll just end by saying that I thought one community member who I've worked with for a long time put it well when in one of the meetings with Pima County, they said that, you know, we're moving now. We've been on the freeway and we've been stuck in traffic for years. We're moving. It's only 20 miles per hour, but at least we're moving. and she was just really excited about that. So I'll stop there unless we have time for questions, but thanks so much, Eric and everybody. This has been really exciting.
Thank you, Daniel. That's really inspiring to hear that. And it's just great that we could be part of helping with the congestion that has been a present for years. At some point we had talked about like a county similar kind of resolution. Do you feel like that is something that is still an idea you're entertaining, or do you feel like you're getting kind of what the, you know, the intended impact of a similar resolution would lead you?
Yeah. So what surprised me about the past few months, and, you know, maybe John would have some insight into this. I know very little about politics and policy, but what has surprised me is that Pima County seems to have just taken the city's resolution as kind of an opportunity to take these actions. And so I think it's in many ways sort of a coincidence of factors that Andres Cano in District 5 also has known about these issues for years. Same with Supervisor Holmes. These are people who not only represent the community, but have been more or less directly impacted by these issues. And so my feeling, and until maybe we hit some kind of funding wall for some of the bigger asks from the community, you know, maybe at that point it could be an issue we revisit. But my feeling is that certain actors in Pima County just really took the resolution as an initiative and as a reason to pursue these actions that maybe was lacking before, but just having that on paper. So I've been surprised that Pima County has done so much based on a resolution from mayor and council at the city level, but that seems to have been enough for them at least to get all this stuff going, which certainly has some funding behind it. Again, it's not quite the level of, you know, a major epidemiological study or blood testing or something, but they're certainly dedicating resources towards it. And that's all been, I think, just through District 5 being kind of constantly in the loop. And then they're the ones who have also kind of started to reach out to Grijalva's office and so on. So for now, I feel like a lot has been done just based on the city resolution.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that with the, you know, kind of like when we go back to the beginning of when we kind of started the conversations and stuff, it was, you know, the resolutions, yeah, they're not going to be, you know, they don't bring the funding or anything, but it gets the wheels moving. And then all of a sudden, you know, things start to kind of move forward as they have been slowly, but they have been moving forward. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times like it, sometimes it's just, we don't necessarily maybe need the county resolution right off the bat, but we could use that as our next resource when things, or if things, hopefully they don't slow down, but if we hit roadblocks, like you mentioned, we can then kind of start advocating for that resolution. And then hopefully that'll continue to move things, you know, in a more, you know, progressive direction in regards to the subject.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments?
Just a comment. Again, I just want to thank you, Daniel, for being here and kind of giving us kind of the background impacts of what's been going on and everybody that has kind of spearheaded this resolution. And it's nice to see that the city and the HRC could kind of light a fire to the rear ends of some things that were kind of in limbo or stuck, have been issues, but maybe were just on the back burner. So thank you guys. I want to thank you for what your work, because your labor has definitely not been in vain now that there's more communication and collaboration around the issue itself. So I'm like Chairperson Howard. I'm excited to see. I know it's not an extensive amount. We're not seeing all these extensive, you know, free healthcare, but it's creating conversation and change is going to have to come. The more that there's communication and conversation and the more people get involved, I know we'll break through at some point. So thank you guys, of everybody that was a part of that committee. Thank you for your work. I am indebted and grateful for just the impacts we've made thus far, and I'm excited to see what the future holds as it relates to this resolution.
Thank you for that. I'll provide one comment or idea. I think actually it would be valuable to find some way for the mayor and council to have an update as well. And have similar content to what you shared with us. Cause I think, you know, everybody's so busy. They passed this thing and it would be helpful, I think, invaluable to keep this on the radar through an update to say, here's where we're at. Here's what's happened. You know, I think this level, this extent, I think is appropriate. And frankly, if you have a wish list that you also want to bring to them at the end of that, say, you know, here are some other ways that we'd love to have continued support, or if you've heard from the, you know, Pima County constituents or public leaders, ways that the city could continue to use the resolution to be helpful, you know, bring that up. But I think it's just another way to keep it on their radar. And, you know, if you get some media attention, that's great too. You know, keep it on the public's radar as well of keeping this momentum going. So I don't know how that happens necessarily. If it's through a written report, I'd love to have you in front of them and find out if there's a way to do that in an upcoming meeting. Maybe it's through, I think they have like a public, I don't know, there's a term for it, where the public comes and makes comment, but I'm not sure the appropriate space. But I just want to plant a seed there and we can follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Ashley. I'm also just amazed that, you know, the work that that Eric and Cedric and John all kind of encouraged us to do has, you know, had so much impact in a short time span. So this is great. And yeah, Eric, I think so. Two things. One is I think that's a great idea to kind of loop mayor and council back in. You know, council member Lane Santa Cruz, for example, was very supportive of this and is probably very invested in kind of seeing how it goes. I think I would probably reach out to Pima County sort of first, just in the sense that they've now kind of, you know, taken initiative on this and they might want to maybe do some of the sort of like, outreach about it, but I could just, you know, sort of check in with them and see how they think about that. Again, I'm new to most of this stuff. I know that county city things are for the most part good, but maybe sometimes, you know, they have to be careful or something. But I think that's a great idea. And the second thing is that now that, you know, the Congress people are getting involved and, you know, it seems like there's also just, you know, so, Congresswoman Grijalva is part of a environmental justice caucus or is getting one going or something like this. And so I think there's, you know, increased kind of like federal attention, to this. And at the same time, EPA has taken some recent steps that are potentially problematic, from our perspective. So I think county, federal, city, I mean, the more we kind of keep people in the same loop, as long as they're on the same, roughly the same page, you know, it could be really great for funding and for, you know, just kind of showing solidarity on these issues. So I think that's a great idea, Eric, and we can maybe just follow up and I can, you know, talk to Pima County about it, but I agree.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any thoughts from you, John, about that idea? Otherwise, we can.
Yep. No, I like the idea. I think it's a good way forward. And then I'll try to keep looping in the conversations and stuff as we continue to move forward. I know I've been kind of out of it for the last few weeks. But other than that, I think it sounds like a good plan. And I look forward to being involved in working with all of us together to keep this, you know, relevant and on people's radar in the county, city, and federal level.
Well, thank you again, Daniel. Just appreciate you, all of your work. I mean, you've been out in the trenches doing this, so just appreciate you.
No, thanks. Thanks so much. And you all are doing very important work. I'm, you know, I can say that as someone who's just observed it happen. So thank you.
All right. Well, let's move on here to our next agenda item. Let me just get the back in front of me. All right. We are on agenda item 5, and that is the update from HRC representative to LGBTQ+. I believe there was a meeting last month, and we were going to hear a report back.
Yeah, so I, at last month's meeting, there was a conversation around, appointing, voting, I'm not sure what term to use, but identifying a commissioner from the LGBTQ+, commission that will then like attend these meetings. And I think we were still figuring out who from this team, or, like this commission would attend that commission. And so I wanted to share that one of my colleagues on that commission, Erna, is here and she's listening in to kind of get a like a gist or like to like be to like kind of see how our commission runs, how it operates, like those pieces. So I just wanted to welcome her to this space. And then I just want also, for this month, we weren't able to meet. But what I can report back is that I am working with the mayor's office to create, a proclamation around Pride Month, which is coming up in June. And I'm working on drafting that through a lens of intersectionality. That's the approach that I've been working on that proclamation. And so I just wanted to share that piece. I don't believe there's any other like updates at this time, but, Erna, if I'm missing something, feel free to share if it's appropriate for her to like share in this point. I think that pretty much covers most of the things related to the LGBTQ+ commission at this time.
Abraham, Rick, you may want to refresh me on the protocols. I think Erna can talk if it's on the agenda item, right?
Correct. So if Erna would like to speak, and of course it's your discretion as the chair to allow a person to go ahead and on that item, just like how Daniel goes ahead and speaks on the other item with TECE. As far as another discussion, just to repeat myself, any other item on the agenda, I can't even talk right. I apologize, everybody. You have the full discretion to go ahead and allow someone to speak. It's a short story.
Well, Erna, if you'd like to say anything additional, you're welcome to. Or to introduce yourself, whatever you'd like to.
Okay. Well, hi, everybody. Thank you. I'm Erna Rosen, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. The only other thing that I would want to add at this time is that since January, the commission has been well entrenched in inviting external LGBTQ organizations to the meetings and speaking, having them share about any difficulties that they're having with funding or sharing those creative things at the creative ways of you know, maintaining funding to keep their organizations going. And so that's a very active conversation that we're having at this time that I could share with you. Right. And that's pretty much it, and everything else that Josue said.
Great. Any questions from other commissioners? Or comments? Great. Well, welcome, Erna, and thank you. Appreciate the conversation and update on this.
Thank you.
Well, just to clarify, Josue, is there anything, any input you are seeking from us, the commission?
I think we were still talking through working through appointing or identifying an HRC commissioner that can attend those meetings to represent the commission. Because I've sort of been like trying to do that, but I also am a commissioner on that commission. And so I think from the last meeting, it was shared that it probably should not be me. I think that's the only thing that we have like pending in that way. Go ahead.
No, I think we can talk about that in item 10 a little bit in more detail.
Okay. I was just going to piggyback off of what Erna shared, just on those conversations. We have been connecting with a number of organizations, not just like LGBTQ+ led organizations, but organizations that also meet the needs of the LGBTQ+ community. And like the intersections of like, we know that, while being a queer person being queer is not a mental illness, but we know that like the experiences that, and like the systems that queer people navigate, impact their mental health. And so we've had, folks from, the NAMI Southern Arizona, which is a mental health nonprofit, come and share about their support that they offer, what they've seen. We had Emerge go and speak about the intersection of domestic violence and the LGBTQ+ community. And we've brought in other organizations, such as like the Tucson Chamber of Commerce, to share. And so I just want to add those things. A lot of the common things that are coming up is the impact and awareness and like funding and ways that like to encourage our community to support the folks here, because our most vulnerable communities are like being impacted. And so I just wanted to add that little like added bit to that, because I thought that was also important. So I appreciate you, Erna, mentioning it, because I spaced it when I was trying to do the quick overview. So I appreciate you sharing that.
And thanks for finishing it. Sorry.
No, that's all right. The proclamation, Josue, around Pride Month, that is a kind of, what is the objective there?
The city of Tucson does a proclamation every year acknowledging Pride Month. And it most of the time has like the same language that talks about the city of Tucson, some of the ordinances that it passed in the like years ago and like some of these things. But from my perspective on that commission, I wanted to connect with them to to address, because it's very, in the past, they've been very, like, generalized. And I think given the time that we're in, that it's important to just take that additional, like, step. So that way all people feel like they're seen, included, and supported. Because oftentimes, when we think about, and this was a conversation I had recently, or a few times, out in the community, but also on the LGBTQ plus commission, is that oftentimes when we think about pride, when we think about safety for queer people, or like those pieces, traditionally they have always centered cis gay men, and they have forgotten or left behind queer and trans people of color. And when we look at history, a lot of the movements that have moved forward supporting the queer and trans community have been led by trans women, particularly Black trans women and other queer folks of color. And so from my conversations I've been having with folks and my perspective that I'm adding to the City of Tucson's proclamation is highlighting those pieces that are often left behind or overlooked, but are important to representing the community that we have here locally. Given the current times that we're in and how we're seeing a lot of the things that are happening are mostly targeting certain communities. And so I know that the mayor and council have put out like statements and are support those things. And so in my vision, what I wanted to do with that proclamation is incorporate that in there. Because we know that like people tune in and like want those things displayed. And so, for me, it's more of an awareness piece, but also like continued commitment to showing up for all people in our community and acknowledging how safety looks different for everyone. But when we, try to make sure that everyone at all intersectional identities and we think about like the most marginalized, like for me, I think about like, Black trans women with disabilities who might be immigrants. When we try to meet their needs and like focus on their healing and safety and see them as a full person and their humanity, then it opens up that possibility for everyone to be, you know, to feel seen, supported, safe, all of these things. And so that's my approach with that proclamation and how I'm working with them to craft it in that way. I hope that answered your question.
Yes. No, that was very, I appreciate that context, the nuance there. And I really appreciate your thoughtfulness on making it more relevant and speak to today's times. And like you said, represent more the local, broader set of the local communities that are overlooked. So that's great to hear. Any other comments from folks? Well, thank you both. Appreciate the update. Let's move on to the item 6, missing and murdered Indigenous people update. I believe Josue was going to attend a task force meeting and provide an update.
Yes, I did attend the meeting. I also attended the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Conference that happens here locally, and have also like gone and attended some of the community events that are happening in Southern Arizona to highlight the crisis. And I also have a few bullet points that were provided from Councilmember Schubert's office. And so I wanted to, I'll start first with the task force meeting. The task force meeting, the Southern Arizona Tucson Pima County Task Force on MMIP is self-disciplinary, self-accountability task force. And so agencies and law enforcement and folks who are part of it, they kind of self-manage or are accountable to themselves to make sure that the work is moving forward. And so at this last meeting, each of the agencies who are part of the task force shared updates from the last time they were together a year ago and like what has moved forward. And they answered questions from those in attendance and the public. I will say that the tribal communities locally, they reported back up how they've been working to address the crisis, how to better respond and create collaboration with other agencies, like, for example, the Pima County Attorney's Office and other organizations that can support with meeting like the needs for like sober living, for mental health, for sexual and domestic violence, for all these other issues that we know impact Native communities. It was the city of Tucson's turn to speak, there wasn't a lot of things that were shared. There were more questions being asked to the city of Tucson that weren't fully able to be answered around what the city has done in the last 3 years. And I do know that there were some, that we did have two detectives, a detective and a sergeant that attended to share back from Tucson Police Department's perspective of being part of the task force. And they spoke very generally about human trafficking. But when asked about specifically addressing the misery and murder of Indigenous children and women piece of it, they weren't able to respond and just shared that they approach things from a one-size-fits-all kind of thing so that no group of people are receiving special, like, treatment. There was a question posed to them about, well, the city and the county committed to addressing the unique needs of the Native tribes or communities here. And so there wasn't a lot of response there. I do know that there was a representative from Vice Mayor's office and the mayor's office who shared that it was their first time attending the meeting, so they couldn't share more from their perspectives, but that they would take it back and kind of gather information to share back with the task force. And so I will say that after the meeting, I did receive an email from Councilmember Schubert's office that kind of shared that they met with the chief and Captain Flores, and they raised my questions to them around the letter. And this was some of the things that they received back. So there was an email that was sent out January 28th, reminding everyone that the turquoise about the turquoise alerts process. And then they shared that there was a training added to the TPD's Power DMS training portal that requires a digital signature from each officer affirming they have completed the training. But they were going to follow up with their training division to share stats on how many officers have completed the process. And that was earlier this month, and I haven't gotten any like update from that. But what I will share is that I did ask folks at the task force meeting, the turquoise alert training is provided by DCS. And according to DCS, TPD has not taken any of their trainings related to the task force. Related to the turquoise alert training specifically for addressing that particular issue. And so I just wanted to share those pieces just to give you all a general like update of what is happening. But I am reaching back out to the council member's office to just with a few follow-up questions that I had from attending the task force meeting. And I know that it sounded like my conversation with the council member's office is that there is a possibility of requesting like I'm trying to think of what it's called, but like a study session during a mayor and council meeting to kind of like bring in folks and fully address the concerns. And so that's, I just wanted to share, that's where things are currently. I do also know, so that was the task force meeting and the other piece, but I will say also just add, and I can, if you all have questions, feel free to like cut me and say, cause my mind is kind of jumping around the different places that I've been in the last couple of months to hear from tribal communities and like folks in our community. But at the conference that I went to, there were representatives there from Tucson Police Department who also did a human trafficking 101 training. And I know people there also asked TPD about specifically around how they're engaging tribal communities. And I know there was more discussion with some of the folks after that. I do want to just add before I end my piece is that there were folks at the task force meeting who did mention or who did some like representatives from tribal communities, like the two here, who did share that they are not in support or more proclamations coming from the city or county without follow up or without action. Because there hasn't been action from those agencies. And so they are not in full support of standing or like coming in for another proclamation. So I will just share that around the frustration that some of the, our tribal communities are having, with, that particular piece of action or follow up or follow through from our local government. And with that, I'll answer any questions that you might have. Because I in my mind, I started jumping around things because I was like, I didn't write these all like bullet points, everything. So feel free to ask me any questions.
So thank you for that update. Very thorough, helpful. So there's two things so I'm clear here. So right, there's two things that are separate but integrated. So one is the task force where you shared where you went to, and there's these different stakeholders. And then there's another component to your update that it speaks specifically to the letter that the HRC passed in March to the mayor and council asking for requests, an update, right? That includes, there is, I'm looking at the letter now, right? Recommendations developed in advance since the task force formation, policies, protocols, or intergovernmental agreements implemented or revised, improvements to data collection and measure benchmarks established to track outcomes, and ongoing collaboration with tribal nations, indigenous-led organizations, and impacted communities. And you're getting kind of mixed, I'm hearing kind of mixed satisfaction with what you're getting from the city after the letter. Is that kind of the tone I'm hearing?
Yeah, I would say that at least what from what the chief, the TPD chief, I'm trying to remember the last name, and so I apologize. But from what she shared with the council member's office, it's not 100% like aligned with what folks in the community are experiencing or feeling, or what was really communicated out, or the experience that was had at the task force meeting. So in a way they are kind of connect, they are connected, but they're two separate. One was a task force meeting, and then the communication piece around the trainings that were added, that the alert, like that came as a response to the letter. So I don't know if that answers your question. But I did attend the task force meeting because I did have an interest in like following up with that piece. And those were some of the things that came up. I know I also went to the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Walk that happened this month. And I just also speak with some folks there who have lost family members. And they also shared about the lack of follow-up from law enforcement. And so I think for me, it's those pieces why when I crafted that letter, I wanted to incorporate like that language to just kind of highlight all of those different pieces. But there is, there seems to be confusion in like what it has happened within the city as far as some of the things that they committed to doing 3 years ago. I believe I have like a meeting with a council member coming up next month or later this month. And so my plan was to kind of bring some of that to my meeting, to kind of like just continue to like bring the conversation and to kind of move those pieces forward, just because I know, historically, there has been a lot of distrust. I mean, there has been distrust because of how, as we know, like colonization and systemic oppression have impacted tribal communities. And I think that, when we commit to meeting their needs and supporting them, like we have to follow through, or it won't, you know, further build that trust. And it's just like, comes off more performative. And so I think for me, it's where I kind of want to continue to engage with Mayor and Council to continue to move that piece forward. So that way our Indigenous relatives and like siblings and community members know that we're not just being performative, but that we do see them and we do support them and we do want them to be safe. So I'll open up the space, but I hope that answered your question.
Yeah. Have they provided a public update? I guess that's the main question or the main call to action in the letter that we passed.
Not yet. From the city, you mean?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Okay.
And so I think that's where, I kind of want to continue to have that piece, and I'll circle back with it. At least while I've been engaging with the council member's office. And so,
Yeah. And is there anything that we as a commission collectively, individually can do to support you in your conversations?
What comes to mind, I think would be helpful. It would be to also connect with each like of your council members, and like also engage with them in conversation. Cause I do, when I do connect with back with and I'm able to connect with Council Member Schubert, I'm going to propose that we do that study session to like bring folks in, because I think that would be like that could be that public update to the community, or if there's another way that they prefer. But I do think that, that when we sent the letter and then there wasn't any like response to it. So I just kind of, I just reached out to the council member's office and asked her for her support with like trying to get some of those answers. And so I think maybe that's the route. I don't know if you all see differently. That's just what comes to mind. I think if needed, like we could like, I don't know if that, if it's a thing, but we can draft, I can draft like a memo or a letter just following up. And then like we can vote on it and then pass it back to mayor and council. I'm really not sure what the best next steps are, but I have been like, from my initial thought was just to engage with my council member.
Mm-hmm. Any wisdom from the group? I think it's right instinct to go to a council member and have more one-on-one conversation about this and, you know, get this on their radar. I think, you know, any council member can, and I'm virtually looking at you, John, because I know you kind of coached the subcommittee when and the TCE stuff on this. But I think a council member can, you know, put this on the more on kind of the radar of the entire, you know, mayor and council, can advise either in the conversation with you when you have reach out one-on-one or bring this to the full body and see, you know, what is the right next step, that the mayor and council is, able to do that might look like a study session. They might, I would think, maybe advise you in a, maybe there's other effective ways, depending on your objective, that might, lead to more success, for you. I think study sessions, at least when I've been, involved in them have been more, I don't think it's open to the public, necessarily unless people are invited. It's more, you've got experts in the room, people who can, speak to the subject, and it's something I think you are invited by the mayor and council to be part of. I do think it's good instincts to reach out to your council member and see, how they might advise moving this forward and getting this, more on the mayor and council's radar for discussion.
I kind of agree with exactly what you said, Eric. And even if at some point, maybe even involving the tribal governments in some way for collaborating on possibly creating that resolution or a joint resolution or something of that sort, but that'd be like a next step or a little bit more down the road. But yeah, the start would be, definitely going with directly with the council member and then moving forward from there.
You're Ward 6, so if you see any of our other wards represented where they might have constituents, vested interest, or, if, for example, Ward 3, Kevin Dahl happens to have an intersection with this work, feel free to reach out to me or anybody else. I personally would be happy to help make a warm introduction or to get this on, my council person's radar. But, I defer to you to kind of guide us on that strategy.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for that update. We'll keep this. I think we can keep this on the the agenda moving forward. Let's move on to item 7, HRC letter regarding Cesar Chavez holiday. We have a draft letter that Belen just dropped off. Did she tell us she's coming back? That Belen drafted. How do you folks, if folks have a chance to see that, review that?
Yes, sir. I did have a chance to review it. I don't know if it would be more advantageous for Commissioner Sisk to be on. That way we could kind of talk about any changes or edits or just kind of have a discussion concerning the letter. I don't know if it would help to talk about it now, since I don't know if she'll be returning, but I did review it and I did have a couple of just suggestions.
Okay. Yeah, I had some suggestions, questions also.
If you guys want to give me a moment, I apologize. I'll go ahead and give her a call to see if she's going to be coming back on, okay?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So I went ahead and left her a voice message. She wasn't able to pick up. We'll see if hopefully she responds in a moment or two regarding, you still have quorum, of course, but just whether or not she'll be able to come back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we able to move on to another agenda item while we hear from her, or do we need to stick to the agenda and not be able to come back until our next meeting?
You can go ahead and skip to the next item just to give her the opportunity to see if she's going to be able to come back and then revisit it, and or, of course, like table it. But yes. If she does come back on before you guys adjourn, you can revisit the item.
Do that, and then we can again revisit it when we get down to future agenda items if she is not on. Okay, so let's go then on to item 8, HRC and Pima County partnership update. I believe the clerk's office was going to see if we could explore whether a county liaison or renewed joint commission is feasible, kind of similar to the Women's Commission, which is a joint Tucson and Pima County commission. Any updates from the clerk's office on that?
So, yeah, that's going to be something that we would recommend reaching out to your ward office. We'll have to double check with our manager as well, but we have been looking into that. We haven't heard back yet from our contact at Pima County, but that's also something we'll have to pass through with our management. But if you'd like, there is, from my understanding, you can recommend it to your council member, so they can kind of get the ball rolling on that if they do want to kind of put that, push that joint partnership.
Okay. And what would, I guess, what I so if I were to reach out to my council member, would point to me, Kevin Dahl, and just say kind of the background, why we're interested in this, the ask to Kevin would be, you know, what are you able to do to
you
see if this is feasible?
Right. You can ask if there's, you know, if there's a way for example, if the HRC, you know, if there's like a way for there to be a, either whether it be a joint commission or a partnership with Pima County, you know, on their end, that would be something to ask them if they can reach out to that.
Okay. Yeah, I have been to meet Matt Hines, a supervisor, Pima County supervisor, and asked him if there was a similar kind of commission in Pima County, and he gave me the information to the administrator, and so maybe I could put, now that she's kind of aware of that, through Matt, maybe I could mention that to Kevin Dahl and see what was any.
Normally that would be something that could be recommended by whether it be the mayor or one of the council members. They could bring that up and that could be a discussion for that.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. I'm happy to move that forward with Kevin Dahl. Bring an update back next month.
And of course, if I got anything wrong, Rick can go and correct me. But to my understanding, that's how it was being done. Thank you, Rick.
And likewise, I can also reach out to Paul Cunningham and just, I think the more that we push it through to our respective ward offices, I think it'll kind of put them on notice that this is something we're wanting to do. So I can reach out to my ward office as well.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. And because of our rules, we can't really coordinate over email. So I'll reach out to Kevin. Ash, if you could reach out to Paul, you know, I'll mention that, you know, you're also in touch and, like you said, kind of build a little bit more momentum and will at the city council level with it. Thank you for that. All right. So what's new in Tucson, Pima County? This is just discussion. Anything that wants to be, should be shared? Seeing anybody unmute, so you also have a chance on item 11, but let's go to item 10 first here. Vacancy and advisory positions. Yes, Rick.
Okay. So with item 10, then I just wanted to reiterate again, this piece of verbiage, it applies to both the HRC and also it applies to the LGBT. And what that comment I'm going to make is this, each one of the commissions can elect if one of the commission members is able to, have the time to represent and serve on the other commission. And by doing that, in order for that to happen, I guess is better put said, is that at the commission's discretion and the person who would like to volunteer, the commission would make the motion to appoint that individual to serve on the other commission in question. And then once that is passed, the legal action report then would be forwarded to the boards and commissions of the City of Tucson City Clerk's Office. They would then in turn go through the formalities of generating the letter, the loyalty oath, and then making that an official process. But again, is first is finding someone who has the extra time to be able to serve and then go through the motion of doing those sets and then vice versa with the GLBT. Now, what the advantage is this way is it helps aids your quorum, adds another person to make when you have other meetings and if someone's out sick. But first is just whether or not finding someone that has the time to be able to serve on that. So that's that piece for each one of those commissions regarding a liaison from HRC to the LGBT, and the same thing with the LGBT and liaison back. Thankfully, and we have Josue, who's been kind enough to be able to, he's ironically serving on both commissions and is able to and has been able to share with the commission the things that have been happening with that other GLT commission.
So we would be waiting for somebody from the LGBTQ commission to appoint somebody who has that extra time capacity to be an HR, to join our HRC as a liaison as well. Or we could just stick with Josue. Okay.
As long as he's able and willing to do so, yes. He's kind of like serving, he's doing killing two birds with one stone kind of a thing right now.
Yeah. That's helpful clarification. So then other vacancy positions are mayor's office, Ward 1. I see Cedric is still a member. So he stepped down as chair, but he's still a member at large.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and double check. Go ahead, Abraham. I thought that you're about to say something, but I'm going to double check on the boards and commissions so I have access, and I'll read that to you right now.
And it's just to confirm that, yes, Cedric is currently still a member. In terms of the vacancies, we do have two non-voting advisory openings. We have one position from the mayor. As we discussed, we have the position for the liaison to LGBT commission. A vacancy for Ward 1 as well.
And so back to Cedric Smith, he is, until he resigns, he's still serving, and his end term date is not until December of 2027.
Okay. I will reach out to him. I'm not sure if he is aware of that or if there's something going on with his that he's not been able to make it. I will just make sure he's clear about that.
Okay.
Then on my end, I think my term expires somewhat soon, at least in the next several months. But I can still look into, because I think the whole term limit thing is expired also in terms of that waiting period to get back on the voting side of the commission. So I'm like mayor Ward 1 or something like that.
And John, you are correct. And the capacity of the advisory member, your end date would be September of 2026. However, you've already met the minimum requirement of not being on the commission as a member for a full year, so you're ready to come back when you think you might have time to become commit to being a full commission member again and just being appointed to one of the other vacancies.
Perfect. Yep, sounds good. And so, I'll probably seek with mayor first, and then if I don't hear anything, probably Ward 1. I've been intending to talk with the mayor about it, but that's so I'll do that first and then move on from there, and then obviously you guys will get the update if anything goes through.
All right, perfect.
That's great. Thank you, John. And if there's anything I can do to help you, John, in this, let me know. You've got it under control, but just offering that.
Be great. Even as chair currently, it'll have an impact and stuff, plus serving as a non-voting advisory member too will obviously show that I've, been on the commission before, plus still am participating. So, that'll be great. And we can, I can, we'll connect in some way that we're able to and, figure the rest out. But otherwise, we'll hear the updates here, but yes. It's,
yeah. And I'm happy to write like a little mini, you know, recommendation that you could forward on, or we can connect offline, but yeah, it's great.
Perfect. Yes. Well, that actually, so yes to that when you have time, but perfect.
If there's nothing else on this topic, let's move on to item 11, Chairperson and Commissioner's Summary of Current Events. One thing I did want to point out here is, or bring up, was the Pima County Justice for All ballot initiative. I don't know if anybody's heard of this. It would give Pima County residents facing detention or deportation access to a public defender. It would be actually, I think, the first in the country to support people with a county office of immigration representation. So far, they have a website if you Google it, but there's 46,000 signatures and they need 60,000 signatures to get it on the ballot. So my church is doing a signature drive on this. You know, it's nonpartisan, so it's, you know, 501c3 friendly. And if you haven't signed it, encourage you to, if you agree with, the principles around that. But like a simple Google search will take you there.
Thank you for that. I'm gonna look it up and make sure I sign, because that's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Pima County Justice for All ballot initiative. There's a whole website. Share it on your socials if you do that. Get the word out. I was really surprised I didn't hear about this, but luckily through my church I heard about. And I should say the deadline is July to get the 60,000 signatures. So there's a little bit of momentum needed. I guess they had done this, tried to do this before, and then COVID happened, and then it freezed, and it wasn't able to go through. So this is another time they're trying to do this, but it's obviously very timely given the public debate around immigration. All right. Well, let's move on here. A future agenda items, item 12. Belen is not on. So, you know, I personally, I'm kind of looking at you, Josue, would be, like to postpone this to next month. The conversation to pass the letter, and we can also move it closer to the beginning of the agenda. So we can make sure we have time to have thorough conversation on that. Just given the edits, I think that, you know, both I have, and I think, Commissioner Jackson mentioned, I just want to make sure that Belen is here to hear those. Do you see any time sensitivity or any opportunity that is missed if we delay this?
Not that like comes to mind right away, because I think the last time I heard they were still like figuring out what group should be involved. So I don't believe that there has been like a lot of movement in it, or like the group, like there have been like groups of people who have like a coalition formed yet. So I think we have time. If we postpone it to, or keep it on the agenda for next month, and just move it up, so that way we can have more dialogue around it.
Okay. Then I'll recommend we do that, move it to next month. Any other agenda items?
I was just going to say, I don't know if we want to do it for next month or the following, but the Tucson Police Department, I think yesterday, released some of their call to service data. You know, regards to like 911 calls or any type of service that they provide, you know, that they've been called out to. And the data's out there. I don't know if it's all the data or not. It's all public, but I just, maybe even just for us to like quickly look through or review it, I can even read off some statistics on it just on the surface level and see what that might lead to if we want to look into anything further, maybe like demographics or anything like that, that isn't necessarily in the basic report that they put out, but that might be something you just put on the agenda just to kind of like look through those numbers real quick and see if anything stands out to us.
Yeah. So they released it or will release it?
I believe they released it on the 20th. So I think that was yesterday. And I just haven't had a chance to like look through it yet or anything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, let's. I like that idea. I think we could put it on the agenda next month and just see if anybody's had a chance to review it. And, you know, if you could maybe share that with Rick and Abraham and then just pass along any links or that, you know, the report or whatever it is, to the commission. And then, if we've had a chance to review it, if there seems to be any, things we want to talk about next month, we can do that. Or if we need more time to review it, if something, you know, came up that we want to investigate a little bit further, we can keep it on the agenda for the following month as well.
Yeah, that sounds good. That way, I just wanted to make sure we had time to do that. And if, you know, the meeting goes longer because we have, you know, our other people that we invite to speak or analyzing other things, we can push that to the next meeting and, you know, analyze it then. So that's perfect. Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Rick.
I just wanted to add that even though the agenda is set from 1 to 13, you as the chair, if you feel that there's a need to jump to ahead or below to another item because maybe time constraints, you're able to pull it out of order, go to that item, and then go back to order when that's done. Just wanted to share that for future agendas or future meetings. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. So let's see. We have the TCA resolution updates. We could keep it on the agenda. I mean, we talked about a follow-up, you know, update from Daniel to the mayor and council, and he's going to check in. I could provide an update on, you know, what he's up to and with that idea. Might be pretty short, but keep it on the agenda. We'll keep the item 6, missing and murdered Indigenous people. Obviously the letter, HRC and Pima County partnership update. We'll provide an update, Commissioner Jackson and I. Does the I'll ask you here, the where is it at? Item 9, what's new in Tucson, Pima County, and item 11, chairperson and commissioner summary of current events. Do they feel like it's redundant? Should we just eliminate one?
I think we could probably pull the Pima County part, like the, well, Pima County Tucson updates, since the commissioner's reports and chairperson's reports are going to kind of fall under any of those. Cause we can report on almost, even if it's national or something like that, or other, you know, things happening in the community as well. So as long as we know that or understand like what the commissioner's reports entail, that it can be pretty wide ranging, you know, as long as we can, you know, try to keep it tied to the commission, of course. We should be fine.
Okay. Yeah. I'll pull the item 9 and keep 11. All right. I will be out of the country next month's meeting. Is there any issue with accessing Teams? in different countries. It's the Dominican Republic. Does that matter?
As far as I know, that shouldn't be. John, I think you've done that once or twice on your travels, right?
Yep, it should be fine. I never experienced any problems. The only thing to keep in mind is if your phone number is connected to the Teams account, you know, that, you know, may have issues coming through, like, for the verification code. So just keep that in mind. Unless you have service down there or you plan to have service, it should be okay to do then. But other than that, you should have no problems.
Okay, that's a good point. I may end up calling in, actually, rather than video calling. Okay. Anything else on agenda items? All right. Well, then let's adjourn at 6:52 p.m. And I will see you at next month's. Well, I personally won't see you. I'm going to be on the phone, but I will connect next month.